Hi, I'm Gavin Smith, and this is Conversations About Running, the podcast from Running Trips. Running Trips are the people behind Kenya Experience and Training Focus Camps. In today's conversation, I'm joined by my colleagues Callum Jones and Tom Boardman, and we delve in to the wide and varied topic of all things running coaching. Right, welcome to another edition of Conversations About Running. A little bit of a different podcast today, hopefully the first of a number of podcasts like this to come. We do have a guest with us, but it's a little bit of a different guest. We've got a member of our own team joining us. So as usual, it's myself and Callum, and then we're also joined today by Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello, thanks for the introduction. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good enough. So Tom is one of our coaches at Running Trips, looks after some of our online runners, and in the future, we'll no doubt be doing stuff on the camps as well. It's always a good idea to get Coach Tom on the podcast. And today is going to be, say, a little bit different. We're just going to have an internal chat. We don't have any external guests today between myself, Callum, and Tom. And what we're going to do is each time Tom's on the podcast, between the three of us, we're going to have a particular topic which we're going to delve into and just share our thoughts and experiences of that as three athletes and three coaches with sort of different backgrounds, different experiences in the sport. And then, yeah, just see if we can sort of delve into a particular area and get our take on whatever it is. So before we get to that today, let's have a little bit of a quick intro to Tom. Tom, you ever done a podcast before?
Not sure we have these in the north.
This is the first
one. Done radio before though, so I think that counts. Yeah, BBC Radio.
I think we've gone from radio though. Radio is a bit obsolete these days. It's very much a dying art form.
Yeah.
Who was brave enough to have you on the radio?
It was BBC Radio 5 Live for one of the students that I used to work with during Wimbledon as well. So prime time, you know, kind of breakfast show. So big honour. And yeah,
what were you talking about? What was the topic?
Basically, how essentially good this person was. They were in third round of Wimbledon. So it was essentially just give a bit of background, and I think they got every man and their dog who knew her at that point to come on the radio and speak. And I've got about 2-3 minutes just talking through what she was like as she was growing up, or the period she was with us.
Yeah. So you were on there just as a friend talking about a person?
Probably more in a professional capacity when she kind of worked with us in one of our other roles. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, I think Tom sort of jumped a few steps there and not explained it. Tom's got a role at Loughborough College where he looks after, Tom can probably explain it better than me, but Tom's sort of in charge of, I don't know, the education program of elite athletes at Loughborough College, something along those lines.
So kind of like elite athletes that basically can't do almost like your conventional education programs. So for example, this tennis player who couldn't go to school, you know, because of training times, etc., and was doing a qualification over an extended period of time. So we work with them, football clubs, rugby league players, a couple of triathletes, mainly tennis and swimming, though, just with the times that they need for training and, you know, kind of when you're away, and we kind of sort and coordinate their education for them and kind of do wrap around with a bit of lifestyle support as well, kind of making it work for them as well. So they were kind of asking us, like, you know, basically, did you see the potential? Because as you can imagine, we see some of the most talented 16 to 18 year olds go in, but the conversion rate isn't that high, essentially. So yeah, it's kind of, they were basically kind of like, you know, kind of what made her stand out, essentially.
Yeah. So are these guys still doing, you know, like normal A-levels and stuff, or is it completely different?
Some of them are, some of them aren't. Yeah, some of them are doing something completely different, and some of them are doing conventional A levels. But there are various different ways and means that you can almost like extend it and do slightly different kind of courses, if that makes sense, or kind of adaptations of how you would take the course, let's say.
Yeah, like extend it, make it a little bit longer and less intense.
Yeah, homeschooling options as well are quite a useful one as well. So you can kind of almost like pay yourself, as it were, to get the qualification materials and then make it work for yourself in your schedule, essentially.
Yeah.
Do you find there's any disadvantage to that in terms of like their social development?
So for example, a couple of them have never been to school since like the age of, I'd say, 8, 9. and all they know is say like swimming pool and tennis, or you know, or whatever your sport is. So yeah, you can definitely see a difference with them compared to say the average person that comes through. But then on the flip side, I'd also say they're almost like a lot more grown up, as it were, in terms of say life lessons and life skills. Particularly if you've like, if you, you know, if you've been traveling the world since you're kind of 11 and 12, you learn to grow up pretty quickly. But yeah, I'd say socially and just in other bits, almost a little bit hard to explain, but yeah, kind of just how they interact, you'd kind of see maybe a little bit more nervousness, like shyness, etc. Not quite got all the social aspects, as it were.
So is coaching something you do like alongside that, like, yeah, or is it part of the same thing?
I'd probably say there's a little bit of crossover, because I say coaching, yeah, isn't probably just setting the training, is it? Like there's all the wraparound with it, but kind of specifically my bit, it would be kind of coordinating and running the running a program for athletics, which I've kind of stepped up to since I started that initial role. So we kind of, now I oversee and manage the program, so my actual interaction with athletes has got less and less. But yeah, we do kind of coaching is part of it, but not directly done by me.
Yeah, I guess they would have their own specific coaches, yes, for whatever sport. Yeah, they're doing, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you'd want me as a swimming or tennis coach.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Do you think you can handle tennis? I'm thinking of some of the advice I've had from you over the years about my running. I could, if I was going to move it to tennis, it would be hit ball over net.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the only one I'd say with tennis that I've seen that I think is very different from other sports is the amount they do from a young age. That'd be the only one that I'd be looking at going, like, the workload's very high. Like, it's two-hour sessions.
Like, to say, in running, you just say that's silly and you're overtraining.
Yeah, I, being honest, I wouldn't have enough of an educated, like, knowledge on the area. Like, I would want to see what they're doing firsthand. Like, you know, when they're saying to me, like, oh, we've got 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, and we've got fitness in between, I'd want to see what each of those specific blocks are before I go, it's too much. Yeah. If you see what I'm saying? But just from an overload point of view at that age, it does really, like, I'd be thinking, like, that is a lot, you know, of training, regardless of what you're doing. Just the mental strain on an athlete at that age, I think, is a hell of a lot of work. You'd want to see what they're doing first before you commented.
I guess you could say, though, if they're, well, because you said, you know, the people who are doing this kind of intense training at a young age are having a different education system. So you could say that same thing about any young person going through school. You know, if someone...
Yeah,
I went to school from 9 till 3, like everyone else. That's a long time to be doing stuff. So if you're doing tennis instead of school, then I guess the workload is actually not much different. It's just in one specific sport rather than 15 different subjects.
Yeah. And you could argue, like, is, say, getting up at, like, you know, say the swimmers, you know, is getting up at 5 and training, say, 6 till 8, and then going straight to school, training in the evening, a greater emotional strain, because you've got other factors then, like, you know, eating, like, you must be tired in school as well. So yeah, I think it's, you're never going to know, are you? Because you can't kind of repeat that same kind of year plan as, you know, a 12-year-old athlete and then come back and do the next in school. It's always about, I think, finding what kind of works best for you. And for some people, it works.
So, Tom, I've got two questions for you then before we kind of move into the next part of the podcast. One, I just want to get... I do want to do like a bit of a sort of bio and background on yourself and your sort of, how did you get into running? How did you get into coaching? Just a little bit of that. Obviously, I know the answer, but just to give that to the listeners. But then just whilst we're on this topic and talking about your other role and your other background, this work that you've done with elite young athletes, how has that filtered over into your coaching in the running world, and what sort of influences and factors have been at play there?
So I've been pretty lucky that I've worked across a variety of sports. And I think running is pretty insular as a sport in terms of, say, looking out to other sports. So there's a lot you can pick up from other sports in terms of, like, I think particularly how they structure it, like, in a professional environment for me, and kind of, you know, kind of when training is, how they recover, et cetera, et cetera. Other little bits that they do as well. You kind of pick up other little bits that kind of other sports are doing. I think particularly one of the big ones I've picked up from other sports, and particularly team sports as well, as a social element, and how like important that is, and how they see that almost like as part of training. I think that's very much neglected in running and individual sports, but you can see huge ethos of that in team sports, I would say. I think that's something I personally picked up on, and I think it's difficult to do obviously in an individual sport like running, but it's something I'm very much aware of. And then I'd say the other kind of big learnings for me would be, it's not kind of seeing who makes it and who doesn't make it. I think that's almost too harsh a kind of a judgment call, but like what traits and what are these people doing that have succeeded, and kind of why they've succeeded. And there's been quite a few clear ones to me. It would be the quality of the athlete themselves. So not necessarily as an athlete running wise, but like just their athletic capabilities, as it were. So for example, if they're a multi-eventer, for example, you know, could they have also been good at netball? Could they have also played, you know, badminton, tennis, etc.? They're just a good quality athlete, I think, has been one of the first and foremost ones I've seen. And then
is that something you then can translate into coaching runners? Like, how does that cross over?
Yeah. So the big one for me would be like the auxiliary stuff you do about around running. So making you the best athlete that you can be. So whether it's drills, S&Cs, you know, getting your hill sprints in, et cetera, different bits like that, making you the best athlete that you can be, not just the best runner you can be. It's kind of like the whole round package. Sure. And so we've done quite a bit of research on this within my role at the minute. And one of the biggest indicators of success at the minute that we're finding, it was commissioned by UK Sport, I think, as well last year. I might need to double check that one. But early specialization, which is tough for me to say from the north, is not a great thing. Basically, the later you specialize translates into kind of greater success as you're going through. So kind of, you know, doing as many things as you can when you're younger, not specializing early, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that there's a high correlation between doing that and, you know, kind of translating to be successful as you progress into kind of, you know, your specialized sport later on, as it were.
What is there in that research, was there a timeline on what you define as later on? So for example, is like,
yeah, it was under 16 was the main one they were looking at. Yeah, if you're almost specializing in, and like your sole training under 16 was your, just for example, badminton was your only sport,
yeah,
you know, it was that element.
Because presumably at some point that data actually flips on its head, and then then there becomes a point where it's like, okay, now the more specialized you are, the more likely you are to be successful in that given sport.
Yeah, and if you look, the traditional points for that would be 16 into and 18. So one, when you're leaving school, so you lose the kind of, you know, the PE other kind of sports and clubs that you do as well. And the second one would be college or sixth form as well, again, where you're traditionally would be doing different bits on the team. Like I know I played rugby up until the day before I went to uni, for example. So I think those two are the kind of the key milestones on that.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that then happens in a positive way, but accidentally, like kids are keep doing other stuff. And then as soon as it's not compulsory, it goes away, but it happens to go away at about the right time.
Yeah, I think it's almost just one of those, personally, from what I read from it, it almost seems like, it's almost like a happy accident, almost, as it were.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're not almost focused too much at that age, because the other bit as well is like, if you're doing other sports, you're still socializing, you're still with your mates, it's still good fun, but you're still kind of training in a different way, as it were. And you know, kind of doing all those little bits. So I agree, and think it's almost like a happy accident by coincidence, probably would be the best way to describe it.
Cal, I'm wondering how that fits, just to something that you've had exposure to and you've got information on. How does that fit with, say, for example, Jakob Ingebrigtsen? Because I've always thought of him as someone who was training very specifically from a very young age.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to look at him as slightly somewhat of an anomaly. he did a lot of cross-country skiing and stuff like that at a young age. And like, I know he did other sports, but all kind of endurance focused.
Yeah, sure.
So he's still got it though, hasn't he? He's still done other sports, kind of, like growing up. And then I would agree, I think you have to look at some people and just go like, they're an anomaly in terms of their ability. The other thing I'd say, for the younger Brits as well, if you look at it though, would be like kind of the longevity of career as well. It might be that his peak is slightly earlier. Yeah. I'd say that was probably case for both his brothers. I'm not too sure exactly how they do now, but their almost career was earlier.
Yeah, you could also argue, like you said, the team environment was quite a big part of success as well, and in other sports at least. And they're, you know, one of the few people that from a very early age had a very committed team. Like he was always training with his brothers and stuff like that. And like,
and then I guess also not something that I'm qualified to talk about in any detail, but Tom was talking about the importance of like the social aspects, which you just touched on, Cal, but also perhaps we can say some of that was missed. And then there's obviously some sort of, I don't know how to use a sensitive word to describe it, but there's stuff going on in the background now in that setup that is sort of not really what you'd like in a sort of family environment, is it? So there's
friction and tension.
Say again.
Friction and tension, but I think that's quite common across a lot of sports and people that specialise early. Tiger Woods would be another example on that as well. But again, he started very, very young, didn't he?
Well, that's going to be interesting to see what happens with Charlie, his son, because his son's starting to show like real talent and potential as well, isn't he? But I don't know whether Charlie's being brought up in a similar way to how Tiger was, because Tiger was brought up in sort of a very strict controlled environment as far as I'm aware.
I think it's always different as well, and it's always like a unique circumstances for kind of I'd say each individual and kind of where they're going and what their background and what they're doing is.
And I think when like obviously when you're looking at large data sets, the temptation is to look at the one individual who happens to be the best in the world right now and say, oh, hang on, they don't fit the data, therefore the data is wrong. But that's only one piece of data out of thousands that have been measured in this study that you described. So I think the data that suggests in general early specialization doesn't lead to more success. Like, you can't rule that out just because Jakob Ingebrigtsen...
And just given that you have, like, some direct insider knowledge into what's going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. All right, so let's then rewind a little bit. And that was really interesting. And thanks for sharing that with us, Tom. But can we now just rewind a little bit and just go, okay, who are you? Like, who are we talking to here? What's your background in the sport? A little bit of a brief bio, really.
Okay, so I'll start when I was younger then. So I'll keep on the multi-sport theme, not specialising too early. So growing up in Wigan, you had basically kind of one choice, and that was to play rugby, essentially. So that was probably the first sport I got into, under sevens.
Otherwise, you're going to get your chips and gravy.
Exactly, and no pie at halftime either. My mum and dad both ran as well. I think that's probably a big caveat to it. Mum was pretty good. Ran 16 flat for 5K, made some England teams and whatnot. So she was very good. So running was kind of always in the family, and they were still at the track and stuff like that, you know, doing bits, regularly go to races and watch them. Obviously, can't remember watching run at such a young age, but I was aware I was there. So probably started running. They were very strict on that, actually. And I was allowed to run, say, school cross-country races and stuff like that, but they didn't let me start training till I think it was second year of high school. I want to say 13, if you're 13 when you start kind of second year of high school. That was the first time I was allowed to go to the running club and almost go for a run, as it were. Like rugby and football, other sports, I was allowed to do kind of, you know, what I wanted. And train as much as I wanted at that point. So obviously I was getting your fundamentals, and we were doing a lot of running and whatnot, particularly in rugby at that age, because it's like a little bit more tick and pass and stuff. I'd say it kind of progressed from there. Started running, and if we kind of link everything together, mum was my coach when I very first started. So just giving obviously her background, and then started going to the local athletics track, progressed on, did pretty well, was kind of, you know, already kind of first and second in county championships, I want to say from under 13, under 15 onwards. Made a few teams and whatnot from the north, progressed, and then that took me up to university. I don't know if I've sped through the early part too much and you've got any questions on that. Yeah, went to university down in St. Mary's. I'm probably one of the best environments I've ever been in. I think it's just a university. Mm. Yeah, yeah. I'd say it's still one of the best environments I've been to. One of my favourite places to run, Bushey and Richmond Park. Absolutely fantastic places to run. And also at the time I went, it was a national endurance centre as well. So there was not just us as athletes, but kind of, you know, people from around the world training. So the Kenyans were obviously living there. The Australians were based there. And then throughout the summer, you would get a variety of teams and people coming over. So from early age as well, or not early age, but kind of university age, you were exposed to a lot of different training methods and people and coaching and styles. I think that definitely influenced me when I was there, seeing kind of I almost like how different countries would do it. I always thought they kind of each country came in with something like kind of slightly different, as it were. And that's when I started coaching. So started helping out people training for kind of London Marathon at that point, as we were based there. Then went on to America. Had a good 3 years there. Everything didn't kind of fully work out, I'd say, for one reason or another, kind of injuries and maybe the system and coaching styles and whatnot. And then came back, tried to coach myself, which I thought I was doing a good job of, but probably wasn't in reality when you look back. And then moved down to Loughborough with this role, and then spent a few years here, had a couple of surgeries, just the one Haglund's, not the two Gavin. And then moved over to our current coach now, and trying to get back to the kind of the form we were at university several decades later, I think would be the best way to describe it.
So, okay, cool. So essentially it's a story of not necessarily early success, but early talent, like early ability, being shown in glimpses into sort of university age, making teams. I'm amazed you didn't mention your GB vest. I know you like to get that in as often as
I thought I'd let you do that.
So making world cross country teams, running pretty fast in America, then coming home, sort of injuries taking up more time than you'd like, including some significant stuff that's needed surgery. And now as we sort of enter our gray hair, balding head years, still trying to take it as seriously as possible and still thinking we can run, still thinking you can run pretty fast. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I still think I could PB across the board.
I didn't know you went to World Cross.
Yeah, it's Gavin not mentioned.
No, to be fair, he actually hasn't. That's mad.
Yeah, there you go.
Impressive. Yeah. Where
was it, Tom? It was in Fukuoka, Japan.
Nice.
That's amazing. How did it go?
I think I ran my race qualifying. I think I was 60s or 70s. The guy that won our junior race was placed fourth in the senior race. But I think he was later done for age group cheating. Well, yeah, I think the first couple were. I think that was almost like Pomp Bikili time as well. I remember watching the senior race and he romped it. And he also, it was when there was a short course race as well. And it was over 2 days.
Yeah.
If you can remember. And he romped both of them as well. Like he was in phenomenal shape at that point.
What was that like being? Because I know whether there's age group issues or not, the difference in sort of PBs between the Kenyan junior team and the Kenyan senior team would be much, much smaller than the difference in PBs between the GB junior team and the GB senior team. Like, what was that experience like? Yeah. Start line thinking, these guys can run 13 low.
I don't think I was fully aware of it at that age or maybe appreciated it enough. I think would probably be my honest answer. The only thing I can remember was like a real humbling experience, and I came home thinking like, I've got like a lot of work to do. Essentially, like I've almost had one good performance, but I've not backed it up, and you know, you kind of got beaten pretty handedly. I'd say that was probably the most humbling bit, and just also like when you're watching them run, you're just like. God, this looks really, really good, essentially. I think is a one takeaway I kind of took from that. But again, it was another good learning trip. Like, you know, kind of Mo was on the team, quite a few other people that, you know, that you could kind of pick up a lot of key information from.
That's exactly how I felt when I did a local school cross-country race in Eldoret, Kenya, let alone the world championships.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably not a great difference in caliber of race, Callum, between what you did in Eldoret versus World Cross.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah.
You call it, it's like a local school race, but it was, yeah, it's a pretty dramatically fast event, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Do you know what race it even is, the one they have in the cross country in Eldoret?
At the track at Chepkolel.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a cross country race, but they go like start at the track and go out and round and finish.
Yeah, I've been there. I think it's just called the lap, like NDALAT, the lat cross country.
Right.
I think it's just like their equivalent of like a cross challenge.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So it's not a championship, really. It's just like one of the lead up events to the championship.
Yeah. Okay. So it is a decent standard then.
Oh, yeah, I've been there watching. So you say you did the junior race?
I did the junior race. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so here we're talking about age group sheets. What are you, mid to late 20s running the kids?
Oh, wow, I was 21 or two.
I've been at that event watching Consensus Kipruto when he was either world or Olympic champion in the steeplechase, like running hell for leather, desperately trying to come sort of 10, 12, 15, 20th.
Wow.
That is one of the high quality races in the Kenyan calendar. Yeah, so you don't need to feel too bad about getting there.
My friend Will, who was training with us at the time, literally came last. Like we would go into the race joking about how good the Kenyans were and everything, and you know we were jokingly saying we're probably going to come last. And then Will, there was daylight between him and the next person, and I'm slagging him off a little bit here, but I was. I think about four places ahead of him. So,
So that same race is the race that made Lauren quit running for quite a few.
Yeah. In fact, I think that might have been Will's last race as well, actually.
thankfully, years later, she sort of found the joy for it again. But she just found it. It wasn't coming last. It was the fact that the local people had no appreciation that she was like, trying hard and is actually a fairly good runner in her own right. The local people in Kenya are so friendly and so lovely, but that seems to go out the window a little bit on race day. And she was literally being laughed at as she was running around and like mocked for being like slow and coming far behind people.
Yeah That's kind of how I felt.
I can't imagine it's a nice experience to kind of take away from.
Yeah, I don't think so. Right, so yeah, that's brilliant. That's a really decent sort of intro and background, and then basically what we wanted to do then on these podcasts, because Tom's going to be with us pretty much every other podcast, we're now going to try and rotate between Callum and I with a guest as we usually do, and then going in house and just having a bit of a chit chat, and probably on other weeks where we don't have all the preamble and introductions to do, we'll then just have a little bit of a discussion about anything that's relevant in the running world at the moment or anything that's going on in our own worlds. But we've probably not got time for that today because we've taken up a bit of time on that first section. So what we wanted to do, which kind of follows on from what we've already been talking, to delve into a particular topic. And today's topic is as wide and as varied as just coaching in general. So we'll sort of see where that goes and whether essentially talking about, is it important? Why is it important? Our own experiences of having coaches and of being coaches, and a little bit open-ended and just see where it goes. But yeah, we've basically got three of us here who have all been coaching for a long time, have all been running for a long time. And we're just going to open it up between the three of us just to see sort of where it takes us, just to talk about, coaching. Coaching for runners, like I don't know who kind of almost wants to kick off. What should we do, Couchy?
I think all three of us kind of grew up running at a time where coaching was you do the UKA UKA qualifications, you get your coaching license, you go to the track on a Tuesday night and you lead a group of runners at the track. And I think there's been in the last sort of 5 years or so, probably COVID kind of accelerated the change a little bit. Now we're seeing coaching is like a massively different thing. You've still got those guys at the track who are doing, you know, leading the group sessions, but coaching is moving a lot more to sort of online stuff, and that's becoming a lot more normal. And I would say actually, to an extent, I think it's better because you can actually have a one-to-one coach who if you get a good on-the-ground coach, at least like you have a one-to-one coach who writes you a program, listens to you, gives you feedback. Whereas for me, coaching when I was, you know, under 15 or whatever, I actually, thinking about it at the time, barely had any contact with my coach. I would see him once on a Tuesday evening. He'd be blowing a whistle at the track, and then I would see him again the following week. So I would actually, when people ask me about, you know, who I was coached by as a junior, I always say, you know, I mentioned my coaches from the club, but thinking about how I'm coached now, I wouldn't actually say they were a coach, to be honest. They were more of like a run leader rather than a coach.
Sure. I don't disagree with that at all, but I do think it's important to add quite a big caveat that there's absolutely nothing to stop the club coach who's there on a Tuesday night from also having that detailed and in-depth relationship.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But like it's not one or the other. No, my experience is similar to yourself, but there are going to be people out there listening. So I do think it's important just to clarify, just so it isn't, because I know that's not what you meant, but just so it isn't misunderstood.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Like the guy who was our coach at the club, you know, leading the Tuesday sessions, was super knowledgeable. And every time I did have a conversation with him, I got a lot from it. But it was more that, like, I don't necessarily see that as being a personal coach, if you know what I mean. Like,
my situation was, yeah, I guess somewhat similar. I'd say I did have a personal coach. And I did speak to him, and he did set my training like for every day. Like, it wasn't only this is Tuesday, now go and do your own thing.
Yeah.
But when I look back at it, it was so one size fits all. It was almost pointless asking what am I doing on the next day, because it was just the same every single time, and it was the same for everyone in the group. But yeah, I think that's kind of just like, that's just the consequence of the individual coaching question rather than but yeah, I don't know. I mean, my experiences with coaches growing up, I'd say were on the whole pretty positive.
Yeah, but did you know at that age that it was an option to potentially have a more serious, dedicated coach to you personally?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. So university was the first time I thought that was even an option and what people did.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, same for me. Yeah.
So I think in hindsight, I think I made a mistake at university, because there's such a good setup at the university I was at Loughborough, and I didn't really get involved with it or take advantage of it, because by that point I had just started having a more personal relationship with a coach at home, and we decided to kind of try and maintain that relationship. And yeah, on that occasion I think I got it a bit wrong, and I would have been far better off jumping in with what was happening at the group rather than being kind of the outsider by myself.
So was that coach able to like incorporate the university sessions into your program?
He specifically didn't want to.
Right. Okay.
Like he was coaching me, and I think coaching me to the best of his ability. Like I wasn't left to my own devices, but I was very much on my own separate. You know, I could be at the track at the same time doing 15 times 400, and there was a group of 30 guys doing 10 by 600 at the same time.
Yeah.
But I had to do the session that was set for me.
Yeah.
I think on that occasion, or on those prolonged occasions, I would have been far better off having what Tom spoke about earlier, having that social, having that friendship, having that camaraderie.
Yeah.
And just having a decent group of people to train with. Yeah. I'd say
I was slightly different to that, whereas I went to university and I started and got into that pretty quickly and was doing that, but quickly found out it didn't work for me and dipped out. I'd say within probably by the Christmas time, I wasn't almost doing what the group was doing, as it were. But I think the proper difference for me is I still linked in quite a lot, and almost like cherry picks, not the right phrase, but picked what worked for me and did little bits each week that suited, as it were. And, you know, we'd adjust my schedule to suit him with that. But I quickly found very early on that the training wasn't suited to me, and there was going to be no adaptation. So it was a kind of, you know, kind of crack on or don't crack on. And it was the don't crack on approach for me for that.
Was that self-guided, or were you still actually being coached?
Yeah, so I'd say mum was still probably like, I'd say more of the mentor and sounding board, but linked in with a few of the other coaches. So there's some other GB coaches and whatnot who were kicking around at St. Mary's at the time. So it was kind of like dipping in and out with them and taking a bit of guidance from that, and also my mum's coach as well, or her previous coach, she'd stopped running by this point, like they were helping me out. So kind of a little bit of everything, I'd say, at the same time, which I think shows that coaching can be a variety of different things almost. You know, it doesn't have to be a kind of one size fits all approach, and it is, I'd say, very, very different for each person.
Yeah. So am I right in thinking that you're coaching, when I say you're coaching, I mean you as a coach now, Tom, are you mainly doing that as an online coach, or are you coaching people in person as well?
I'd say 99.9% is online.
Okay.
Just with the style of it, logistics, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I'd say, majority is online.
So then going back to kind of Gavin's, what he said was an issue for him when he was at university, of his coach setting him certain sessions, but he would maybe have been better off with the group. Is that something that you tried to kind of amalgamate as a coach? If you've got runners who, you know, also have access to a club and a group workout, do you try and incorporate that?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest one that I found, and the biggest one that I keep in for athletes, probably against what I would not traditionally want, or like I'd say the perfect model would want, is part run. I think that's been the biggest transformation, certainly since I was at uni. The number of people that want to go to part run every week. And if you say to them, like, yeah, you can go, for example, this week, but I want this to be your recovery 30 minutes easy, for example, I'd say that would be the one that I definitely keep in. So I think that's almost not a replacement for the club, but certainly how a lot of people are now getting into it through part run traditionally, rather than going to the club, as it were. I say that, I'd say, has been one of the big transitions. So I still keep that in for a lot of people, because they're like, no, you know, I go every week. I want to keep going.
Yeah. So I guess you get that sort of that social element from there as well, I suppose.
Yeah. Definitely. I think, you know, seeing the same people, I think people quite like it as well, knowing that almost like you go in and the route's marked out, there are going to be people there running with you, for example, and you can use it in kind of, I always think, in whatever way suits you best. You know, kind of just make it work for you.
Yeah. But I'm right in thinking as well that how many people are you coaching for a start?
I think we've probably towards about 30, 35 at the minute.
Yeah, okay. So you must have quite a wide spread of abilities within that 30 people.
Yeah. I'd say probably almost like that sub-elite category all the way through to kind of, you know, completing a marathon's the goal.
Is that where you'd place me, Tom?
Sub-elite?
Yeah. How do you categorize me? Because this is something Tom and I have long WhatsApp discussions about on at least weekly basis, where Tom categorizes me as a runner.
And what Tom just described in his the range of runners he described there, I would describe Gavin as trying to complete his first marathon.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
I'm going to try and do it at a sub-elite level. So
you need to categorize. You need to add the caveat in that you called yourself a serious elite marathoner. This is where it started. This is where it started from. You use those terms about yourself. So that is where it's come from.
So where it's come from, Cal, is that I said, in order to try and run my first marathon at a level that I'm going to be happy with,
which is serious and elite. Serious and elite.
Yeah, I am going
to. You use live those words.
Right. Let me finish. I am going to live my life and treat myself as a serious elite runner.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't say I am an elite runner. I said I am going to live the lifestyle, and I'm going to make decisions on the basis of that I'm an elite runner.
Just take out the words "going," Callum, and that's exactly what he says. I'm a serious elite marathon runner. He just didn't put "going" in, but now he's trying to recollect it. He's put "going" in. That's the only difference of what you need to know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. Let's just leave it there then. I am a serious elite marathon runner.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Good. Sorted.
It is actually hard to kind of, use those types of phrases to describe where
it is. I think football would be a good example. Like, anyone who plays football on a Saturday is a professional footballer, but that could be like 50 quid in the Midlands Division 9 or, you know, Premier League. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like, what's your, you know, almost what's your view on it?
I guess it is over to you to describe yourself, really. And like Gavin said, like
I've never described myself as a serious elite marathon runner.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't fit these categories.
I think it is more like your own. Yeah, it's your own mindset as to how you treat running. Like there are people my level who kind of run for fun as like hobbies between work and stuff, and they're still running faster times than me. And there are people who are not as fast as me who treat it as seriously or more seriously than I do. So it's hard to put a category on it based on performance.
I think that's fine though, isn't it? Like, I think that's like, you know, if you're trying to break 40 minutes, and in order to do that, it requires like ridiculous dedication. Mm. But for you, that's a worthwhile achievement, and you're going to get satisfaction from that.
Mm.
Then that's great.
Yeah.
And then just the same, if you're messing about and you're barely even taking it seriously, but you can run 66 for a half, then like more power to you.
Yeah, true.
Let's bring it back a little bit before it sort of descends into me and Tom just like trying to have a go at a cover, which it easily could do. Let's talk about our own setups and sort of what came before in terms of our coaching setup. So I think Tom and I have both had a decent play around with self-coaching. Is that something you've done, Cal, or have you always been coached?
I would say I've always been self-coached, but with that kind of pretty good level coach who's there once a week on a Tuesday evening or something. So I would, yeah, for most of my like junior years, I would be going to the club, doing the club sessions once or twice a week, and everything else in between that I had to fill in based on my own knowledge.
Right. Okay.
And I did that basically by looking at what other elite runners were doing, which I don't know, maybe was a mistake at the time, because I was training pretty hard as a junior athlete, looking at people like, yeah, I was reading like Seb Coe's books and stuff, seeing how much like strength training he was doing and how many miles a week and how much intensity he was doing, and trying to replicate that. And yeah, I don't know if that was the optimal route, but that was my setup really. And then when I got to university, I had a bit more of a personal coach. But even then, I would say, yeah, like you said, the coach who was coaching me at university was coaching the whole university group. So how much time they had to like dedicate to me, yeah, I don't know. But it was at least getting a program that had something written on it daily. And then that's pretty much when I was moved over to an online coach who, in my opinion, has been much better, just because.
You're allowed to talk about him. Like, this dude doesn't work for us anymore. We don't have to like.
Well, anyone who listens to the podcast knows that I'm coached by Hugo. We used to have him on here quite regularly, but he's been a great coach, because even though he doesn't see me running in person very often, if ever, it's like I speak to him pretty much every day, and you know, I'm giving him pretty detailed feedback, which I've never done with a coach before. And actually, I think it's kind of one of the mistakes I made as a younger athlete, was thinking that just because my coach was there seeing me training in person, I didn't need to speak to them, because, you know, they're there, they've watched me train. But that doesn't mean, just because they've watched me train, doesn't mean they know how I felt, or, you know, how well I thought the session went or anything like that. So I think having that communication has really helped me. Since having a personal online coach. That's my summary.
Sweet. So Tom, how long were you self-coaching for, and did it come with any, you mentioned that you didn't think it wasn't the best, but did it come with any sort of success?
Yeah, I definitely think it did, in terms of trying kind of what worked for me and what didn't work. I think kind of that was probably the biggest learning I took for it. And also kind of the big one for me, obviously, would have been in and around the Haglunds, and I just pushed too hard and I didn't listen to the advice that I got and the physio bits. It was almost like kind of, you know, once it felt okay, I cracked on far too quickly and kind of pushed it too hard. Say that again, sorry?
Post-surgery?
No, pre-surgery. Pre-surgery. Okay. Like I think I could have prevented surgery if I had a coach at that point. definitely. Or if I had the coach that I've got at this point, I think we would have prevented surgery, because I don't think I would have, you know, tried to almost like not run through it, but how quickly we came back and not listening to the kind of the body enough.
We've thrown out the word Haglund's a few times. I just want to clarify, because Tom and I have both had surgery on for Haglund's syndrome. Yeah, so just to quickly clarify for anyone listening who's never heard of that, that in a nutshell, that means you got a bit of bone at the back of your calcaneus digging into your Achilles tendon. Personally, I don't think I could have avoided surgery no matter what I did. Like, we did so, we adapted so many things to try and alleviate the pain. For me, I think surgery was an absolute inevitability at some point down the line. It's not necessarily true for you. So yeah, go on, carry on.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, the interesting one for me is I've only had it on my left and not on the right, and I've never had any of the same symptoms on my right. So I definitely think it potentially, I agree, maybe at one point I might have needed it. Obviously, you never know, and kind of, you know, as you progress your running, do a little bit more, it might have flared up. But I think I obviously could have been smarter in and around that decision. And then I think the other probably big learning for me was, at that point, I don't think self-coaching was the right option, or I got the best out of myself at that time. I think that was probably the other big learning I took from that period. And that was when I just came back from America, which is a bit of a not unsettling period, but I was kind of a bit like, you know, I don't know where I'm kind of going to live in the UK, where I'm going to be and what I'm essentially going to do. So
yeah, kind of looking for work, you're not, yeah.
Yeah, to kind of, you know, what essentially am I going to do? And I was pretty much adamant I was trying to get back to America at that point until I found out all my visa issues and I weren't allowed to fly back. So then that kind of, you know, delayed me looking around for a coach over here and whatnot.
A follow-up question then to both of you is, earlier Gavin mentioned that when he did have a coach but was also kind of training with the university group, the coach was somewhat setting a bit of a generic program, whether that was generic for the whole group or repeating the same things each week. I guess there comes a point in an athlete's progression where they reach or start to reach their potential and get a bit more get faster, I guess, where you have to be more specific with the program and you have to start changing things and making it more varied in order to continue improving. But I guess there is also a point where you can be generic with the program and you can somewhat, to an extent, just set generic sessions and more running would result in better performances. Is that something that you two have experienced with your coaching? It almost sounds a bit insulting to say, hey, I'm giving you a generic program when someone's, you know, asked you to coach them specifically.
Yeah, but it's actually the right thing to do, you mean?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So first of all, so you got my situation a little bit muddled up. You've kind of combined two separate things. When I was saying about getting a generic program, that was when I was in a club setup and I did have a coach, and I was with the coach for sort of at least two sessions a week.
Right.
But then the running in between it, yeah, was just very generic, same every week. I'd know what he's going to say. He's going to say 40 minutes. So I've got a couple of points there. And yeah, really interesting question and really interesting idea. So interestingly, the setup that I'm in now, which is also the same as Tom, so we got the same coach and we're in the same training group, is actually quite formulaic and quite similar, and like week by week it's pretty similar, and actually at the moment I think it's exactly right for me and it's exactly what I need. And yeah, potentially back then maybe it was also exactly right as well, but the big difference is in the way that sort of the way it's communicated to me and in the interaction between me and coach. And it's sort of conceptual, so it's a little bit hard to describe, but it's basically a case of Alex, our current coach, I just basically have complete and utter faith in him that this is the right thing for me to do. Whereas back then, almost, I don't know if it's just because of a communication thing or just because Alex is really good at sort of the psychology side, and just like Alex, so like my current coach, I find just basically stops me from overthinking anything.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, if he tells me, right, Monday, 9 miles, I go, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Whereas previously, I think I was just questioning it and I wasn't sure. I don't feel like I've given the answer I wanted to give.
If you and Tom went down to the pub or cafe or whatever you want to do, and you're comparing programs, and you look,
I'd want sort of a specialty coffee flat white, like really well made.
I think there's a few of those in Woodhouse, isn't there?
Like, yeah, a lot of care and attention put into the dosage and how many grams of coffee went into the basket, and you know, was it a good extraction? Pint of bitter.
Is that exactly how it sounds?
Pretty much, yeah.
So you and Tom went to the local pub cafe and got your respective drinks, and you're comparing programs, and you look at each other's programs. You go, hang on a minute, they're the exact same. Would you be annoyed?
So there'd be a lot of it'd be the exact same structure.
Yeah,
there'd be a little bit of there would be some variation, but yeah, there'd be weeks where it's identical. There'd definitely be weeks where it's just the same program.
Yeah,
but then there would be.
That's fine because it works for you.
Yeah, it's fine because it works, and I think it's fine because it's explained why it works, and I believe, like,
yeah,
I just think the coaching setup I'm in at the moment, I have no reason or desire to question it. Like, I'm kind of bought in, and I believe that Alex knows what he's doing. I believe that he's got sort of my best interests when he is setting it.
Yeah.
But you're right. There would be times where, yeah, we compare programs and we're like, all right, we've got the same training.
Yeah. Okay. And I think broadening my question a little bit, right now we're talking about you and Tom, who, as you've already alluded to, are both pretty good runners. Like, I mean, Gavin, you're aiming for you're an elite marathon runner, as you say. You know? So if we extend that question to, yeah, I don't know, someone who's training for a 3.5 or a 4-hour marathon or whatever it may be, is there more scope there to give a generic program and that generic program be correct, if you know what I mean?
I think in a lot of circumstances the answer is yes, but then it comes with the big caveat of what support are you adding around that?
Sure.
Like, are you just set it, you know, I think some people will be getting sent a program and they'll know that no thought's gone into it. This is just the program.
Yeah.
And other people will be getting sent essentially the same information, but just presented in a way that kind of helps them to understand it and helps them to then just feel like for me, a big part of it is just feeling calm, and it just takes a mental stress away of not needing to worry or not needing to think about it.
Yeah. Sure.
But I think I could also be sent a generic program and not get that feeling. So that's the skill of the coach.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So how I would compare it then to my previous situation. So I was self-coached for a long time and did have some good success with it. And I ran, in some cases, at least as fast as I have done since I've been with Alex. But it was a constant mental stress.
Yeah.
Because the program itself was convoluted. So obviously I was with Canova for a long time, and then I was trying to self-coach myself along that same, like along those same Canova concepts and along that same basis.
Mm.
And even though I'd actually coached directly with Canova for 3.5-4 years, trying to fit everything that I thought needed to be included into my own program just became so complicated. Yeah. And it actually made me realize after a while, like, yeah, this is Canova's skill as well. Like, when he writes a long thing online about this is how you train for a half marathon or anything, if I compare that to what we actually did on the ground is a much more stripped back version. Not necessarily stripped back, that might not be the right word, but like you don't need every single step of the 12-step program. You know, you might miss 3 or 4 of them, and then it just fits into the week or into the month better. Whereas I was trying to sort of fit every single thing in. Yeah. And even though I was running okay, it was just such a long-winded thought process. And I was just, so I mean, in a nutshell, for me, essentially it's more of a mental thing, I think, than a physical thing.
Yeah.
Like, really, really briefly, it's, yeah, just psychologically, it just works for me.
Yeah. Providing that you trust the coach who's given you.
Yeah. There's still got to be a body of work behind it that I can see, okay, this has worked before. I've got to actually see it working for myself, which it has done. Because I say I haven't raced for a number of years now, but the last race I had was a 20-second PB in an event that I've been running all my life. So yeah, I know that the program works for me. If I was getting no results, I guess it would be difficult to keep buying into it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And what about for you, Tom? Is this similar kind of method of coaching? Like, let's say 10 of your 30 athletes have contacted you saying, hey, I'm aiming for a 3:20 marathon. Would you send them the same program, providing you could justify it, or would it be different for each individual?
So I've never said a generic program, but I'd say the structure and framework of how I coach would be the same for everybody. But yeah, the individual application, I'd say, would be different. So in terms of your question kind of on generic programs, I think they definitely do have a place and they can help certain individuals. Mm. In terms of, say, I think probably for a lot of people, it's holding them back, I'd say, rather than pushing them forward too much and giving them kind of the weekly structure that they need. But the big one for me is the biggest one for me, and that would be like the lifestyle factors, for yeah. example, of kind of, you know, what's going on in people's lives, how you're going to kind of do certain bits of it. And also kind of, you know, what if you get ill or injured as well? Do you just miss the days and then come back straight away and just go on to, like, you know, I was ill Monday, Tuesday, so you just start back Wednesday? For me, I'm personally not a huge fan of them, but yeah, I would set very, not similar training, but the structure and the framework would be the same.
Yeah.
But how you apply it would be different.
Yeah, exactly. Almost. So
I think I kind of took that for granted. Like, that would be included in what I just said, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But because, like, for instance, Tom, like, do you not think, how many times have we turned up to training on a Friday? What are we doing? Yeah. 10 mile tempo. All right, fine. See you later. Let's go for a 10 mile tempo.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you turned up and said, oh, by the way, Alex, I was really under the weather yesterday.
Yeah.
Then obviously he's going to change it, and we're not going to both go and do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. I'd say probably we've done that many a time. And then I think there's many a time where we've probably gone to the cloud trail that's been kind of blowing a gale, and it's like, right, you know, you've kind of got no chance of hitting your pace today. So we're not progressing from last week. We're almost just going to do the same as we did, you know, with what the weather allows. I think that's another huge one. Like, you know, like, if it's to go out and run like marathon pace, but like, you know, say for a long run, and you're looking at the weather that we've had in the UK recently with the storms and stuff like that, you just go, oh, well, it's on my program, but I've still got to go out and do it. Or you a little bit kind of, you know, think about it a little bit more logically and go, hey, should we just run easy today? And then, you know, when it's nice tomorrow, go a little bit harder tomorrow. Yeah. I think it's those kind of nuances for me that I think probably is this one of the skills of coaching, I would say. I think is very, very good at that nuancing and that aspect, I would say.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a couple of things there. And the first one is that I think probably it's taken a while to get to this sort of conclusion. But I think the conclusion is almost that there is a program and a structure that is generally fairly set and fairly consistent and say that the coach believes in, but that doesn't make the overall application and the overall delivery generic. Cause it's like, okay, right, this is what I believe in. I believe in, this is my overall philosophy. This is my overall structure of a week, more often than not.
Yeah.
But then there's so much room for tailoring it to individual circumstances, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I'd say probably we've obviously had the same coach for a long time, but I reckon, as a ballpark, probably over the last 3-4 years, there's probably less than, I'd say, 20 weeks where we've had the exact same week.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the mileage.
Sure, but that's more to do with you and I's personal situation than
the training schedule.
Like, if we were both healthy, both, like, no injuries, no illness, both aiming for anything from sort of 5K to half marathon, I think we could have like an 80-90% similar week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then it would get obviously a lot more similar. I'd say that's when the nuances would be slightly different, but on a much smaller scale. Yeah, I fully agree with that.
And we're also, to pick up on something that you said in your summary of it, is that you, although we've got differences, you and I are fairly similar. Like, we're in a fairly similar life situation. Yes. We've got fairly similar, like, running ability, similar time commitments,
age as well.
There's far less difference between us than, say, someone who works in a hospital on night shifts and then has versus someone who's got all the time in the world.
Yeah, so for example, I'd say that's a pretty good one. So I do coach a landlord of a pub. So on the weekends, for example, he finishes, say, you know, 3-4 in the morning, and then he has more time during the week. And then if you look at your generic program, it's kind of like, you know, you would long run traditionally, you know, in the UK on the weekend. For him, we long run once every 2 weeks, just with the way his shift pattern works. So the structure and everything is still the same, but we just go, you know, you can't finish at 4 a.m. you know, on a Saturday night and then try and go and run a long run at 10. You know, it's the quality is obviously just going to be really, really poor. So for me, that's kind of where, you know, kind of where I was going with the structure and framework is the same, but the nuances and how you unpick it and plan it for everyone has got to be for the individual.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I think it's much more a case of like, imagine there's like a blueprint for for anything. Imagine like, I'm looking out the window, I'm seeing a car. So imagine you're buying a new car. The shell is the same, but then there's so much you can change within the shell. And it's still a, what am I looking at over the road? That's a Fiat 500. It's still a Fiat 500, but it could be a different color, and it could have different wheels, and it could have.
It'll be Rolls Royces and Bentleys this time next week, won't it?
All right. So, yeah, okay. Tom's joke there is that I may or may not be moving to a quite desirable village and live in the cheapest, most rubbish house in the posh village. But yeah, it's going to take a lot more than a week, Tom. I don't know if you're aware of how house moving works. But
I thought he was on it. I thought matey boy had come and done the certificate, and you know, you've got onto it next week.
Well, yeah, I mean, unless you're going to come and buy the house because you're the only one who knows it's on the market at the moment.
Yeah, I'll see.
Gavin's using this podcast as a.
Yeah. If you are interested in a detached property in Loughborough, there's one coming on the market fairly soon.
Three bed. So the guy came around to do it yesterday, early this week, actually. Lauren was laughing at how he was describing the house, like he's walking around and is everything gets like not exaggerated, but everything's amazing. He's like, magnificent open plan kitchen dining area.
I mean, I've been in it and I wouldn't use the word magnificent.
Wow, you're not a professional estate agent, though, are you?
Yeah, you
wouldn't know.
No.
Right, I think that's been a pretty good first podcast in this new series. We will get better. So if you thought we mumbled a little bit, let us know. Or if you like the mumbling, feel free to let us know as well.
No, I think it's good. The other thing I'd say is, do we need a bit of an agenda for each
week?
We're
still recording, by the way. Like, this is still part of the podcast.
Would be like agenda for each week, and can we find a way that this works a little bit better on the phone wise?
Yeah, and like I said, we are still recording. That was part of the podcast.
Oh, but I thought we said we can cut it out.
Yeah, okay, we can, but that just gives Callum extra work if we do it in.
sorry, Callum.
Right. So, so I thought that was a pretty decent first attempt for our first podcast of this format. So let us know what you thought. We potentially rambled a little bit, so you can let us know whether the rambling was you want us to cut down on the rambling and try and be a little bit more concise, or if you like it when we're just a bit more chit-chatting, a bit more of sort of a pub chat or a posh cafe if it's my choice. Let us know what you thought. Tom will be back in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll have another topic that we'll dive into. It won't be as wide and varied as coaching generically. Maybe we'll talk about hill sprints or double threshold, dare I say it, or long runs, or you know, whatever we might want to talk to. So if there's an area you want to hear the three of us delve into, just let us know. And otherwise, thanks to Tom for joining us for the first podcast.
Thanks for having me. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. I thought you did well. Came across well, I reckon. We might get some feedback saying otherwise, and people couldn't understand your accent. But we might have to get your elocution lessons if you're going to be here for a while. But
a request for subtitles on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right, Callum. Cheers again for your time. Any final words before we?
No, all good. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to making it more regular.
Yeah. So again, thanks for listening. We appreciate you spending an hour of your time with us. Hit us up on Instagram if you want to ask a question. If you want to know anything more about the camps, about our coaching, you can head to the website, www.runningtrips.co.uk. Specifically about Kenya, then, that would be www.traininkenya.com. Where I say, Callum and I are on the Instagram DMs. That's about as much as we do for adverts on this podcast. So again, thanks for listening, and we will see you again next time.